In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 384. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, buddy? You enjoying the first few days of both the Major League and AAA seasons?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad baseball's back, especially minor league ball. So Friday was good, and we got AAA baseball back to watch. And, you know, watching Kobe Mayo, as we speak, hit a homer. Maybe we can finally – well, no, that's not true. People won't stop talking. Just like, they'll say he's a quad A player at this point, but I still believe in Mayo. But it's good to see, you know, the prospects back out there, and we'll have all full season affiliates back next Friday. So that'll be good.
Yeah, definitely getting back into the swing of things here. But yeah, the quad A label, it's really hard to put on a player who has, oh, how many at bats does he have at major level? 41 at bats at the major league level, 17 games. Like, that is way too early. I think Kobe Mayo will show people that. Just a matter of when he get back up to the major leagues, because as we know, this Baltimore offense is loaded and full. So Kearsad's riding the bench for the most part. Mayo in AAA, Basayo in AAA. See when these guys get in to get their reps here, but should be obviously a fun team at Norfolk once again. So we're going to go over some early season thoughts. I know it's just super early, but a few things that have stood out to us, you know, a few minor league things and a bit more on the major league side, as we've had a little bit more games in the major league so far as opposed to AAA. But we got about 10, 11, 12 things on the docket for today. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Ross, MLB. And the show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynasty.go.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. We're putting up a ton of content on both of those platforms. And make sure you check out all of the great content available with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. I know the draft season has come and gone, but still have plenty of great in-season content, you know, rankings, projections, you know, waiver wire, you know, bullpen, start sit, anything you need to dominate your leagues this season, we have over on Rotoballer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio. Use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout for 10% off. All right, let's start in the minor leagues here with Nick Kurtz, who went a triple shy of the cycle on Saturday, hit his first home run, which if you look at the open face replay of it, was just stupidly easy power. It looks like he's barely even swinging, and the ball rocketed out to right center. I think it was like 108.5 off the bat or something like that, 422 feet or something along those lines. So I've been really thinking about this even before the season started, just kind of looking kind of at a lot of my, you know, first baseman in the my prospect rankings here at the top. Obviously, you got, you know, Jack Caglione, you got Kurtz, you got Bryce Eldridge, you know, Basayo, if you kind of count him as a first baseman because he's played there and might end up there long term. I'm starting to think that I like Kurtz more than all of them. I've already moved him ahead. Now, he was already ahead of Jack for me, even though I like Jack. Kurtz was ahead of Jack for me. I moved him ahead of Eldridge this offseason. But I'm like, I think I like Nick Kurtz more than Basayo at this point because, you know, they have similar power, long-term power upside. But I think Kurtz is the better hitter. He makes more contact. He's got a better approach at the plate, and that's no slight to Bisaccia whatsoever, but I've moved him ahead of Bisaccia in this most recent update of mine too, and now I'm wondering, should Kurtz be a top 10 prospect right now for fantasy purposes? So given his blend of, you know, contact, approach, power, yeah, he won't fight any speed, but he could just be a really standout stud in four categories. So I think he's definitely in that top 10 overall prospect discussion at this point. What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
I'm just lower on first baseman in general, so
that's fair.
I'm not there, and Kurtz is a walking injury. He's had five injuries in the last 2 years, so it's just a guy that hasn't been able to stay healthy at any point in his career, and that's the case in last fall. He debuted at a hamstring injury. He's had a wide variety of injuries affect him, and he was hurt again this spring for a little bit, and you just have to wonder, like, can he stay healthy enough? Like, I don't think there's any denying the talent. I like Kurtz as a talent. But first base only prospects typically don't pan. You just look at the history. If you go back and look at the top first base prospects year over year, and it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, like, they're, some of them are fine, but most of them aren't very good. I mean, so one dimensional player for most of these guys at first, which kind of hinders them. I have them, Kurtz, right around 30 overall, okay, which maybe that seems low, but given the combination of injuries and just first baseman in general, like, I've got most of the first baseman down there. Still got Bisaccia top 10 because I believe he's going to catch. Like, he looked really good catching when I saw him this spring. So I think that there's that differentiator for me. You know, Bisaccia hits the ball hard. He makes good contact. Kurtz is definitely better contact and approach, but it's just more the ability of, you know, can he stay healthy and give you a full season? And I'm not sure that's the case. So I'm not willing to go that high on him. I actually dropped him in my update just given, you know, his injury history that we've seen. I do think we see, like, is he up soon? Yeah, I think he's probably up in June. I think it's reasonable. Kind of the, he's probably moves a little quicker than Jacob Wilson did. They had Wilson up right out of the All-Star break last year. But I'd kind of suspect that Kurtz is a June call up. And how does he fit with Soderstrom if he's hitting? Well, if Soderstrom hits enough and Kurtz hits enough, they're going to find ways in the lineup. Like, it doesn't matter. They're not going to keep Soderstrom out just because of Kurtz if he's hitting. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how it shakes out. But I do think that both are going to be up, or Kurtz will be up, and they'll both be playing the lineup pretty soon.
Yeah, that was one of my bold predictions I did on my article on Rotoballer about a week and a half ago or so, was Nick Kurtz being up by the end of May and cranking 25 home runs at the major league level this season. Obviously, it's bold for a reason, but with all my bold predictions, at least, I don't know how anyone else does theirs, but I think there's always like a, you know, 5-ish% chance of those predictions coming true. I mean, why not, right? Like, another one was Chandler Simpson leading the American League in steals. So, you know, it could happen. I'm not saying it's 0% chance, but yeah, if Kurtz is up soon enough and he's already in AAA, hitting well first couple games of the season, one of the best blends of contact approach and power in the minor leagues that you'll see. So, yeah, I think he is up pretty soon here. I wonder how that, you know, this is that catcher, first base, DH part of the lineup for the Athletics is pretty loaded already, pretty full. So I kind of wonder how that works out. But when Kurtz is ready, they'll make a spot for him. He's that type of prospect. But I know, so you have him behind Bisaccia. Do you have him ahead of Eldridge at this point, Chris?
No, I've got him in the same spot. Like, they're in the, I think they're all back-to-back. I'll pull up and see, I'm almost certain. Like, I kind of put all those first basemen in kind of a glob of tier, like Kurtz, Caglione, Eldridge. But Bisaccia is in his own tier above, so that's kind of where I am on him. Is, yeah, but those kind of stand out above the rest. Like, to get to the next first baseman, like, looking down my prospect rankings, I guess Josue Briseño?
Yeah, I was about to say, I think Briseño is my next guy, and he's in, like, the 60s, 70s. I have Briseño 67 right now.
Yep.
Oh, Isaac's in that range. Yeah, so you drop down to, like, the Xavier Isaac, Briseño. I don't know if we count Trey Morgan as first baseman anymore, but yeah, that's a pretty sizable drop to that next tier for me,
yeah,
at least.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm much more confident in that top tier.
Oh, absolutely. And I have all of them. So I've moved Kurtz up to, I have Kurtz 13, I have Bisaccia 15, I have Eldridge 25, and Jack 31. And so I have them all in the top third of my top 100 right there. So, but yeah, Kurtz needs to stay healthy. That's absolutely the X factor with him. So we'll see if he can. Hopefully he can. Next guy here, Owen Casey, had 3 strikeouts yesterday, 5 overall in his first 9 plate appearances. And yes, it's, you know, super small sample size, so nothing to like really be over, you know, blowing yet. But at the same time, you've never seen Casey have a strikeout rate under 25%, or excuse me, 28% in any season so far. I mean, we've seen the above average power be there. I mean, this could be a, you know, 25 homer bat over the course of a full season. I mean, he had a 42.5% hard hit rate in AAA last season, but also had a 28.4% strikeout rate, which is actually the best he's ever had at any level. He had 31% K rate in AA in 2023, 28.6% in high A in 2022, so on and so forth. So you kind of got to wonder, at least I do, it's like, all right, he could be a 25 homer bat, but where is the average long term? I mean, contact rates, while they're below average, they aren't terrible. He was 82% in zone last year and around 71% overall, right around a 14% swing and strike rate. Those aren't great, but those aren't, you know, huge red flags either. So I don't know. I'm kind of, I've been not fading Casey, but he's been like slowly slipping down my rankings. He's still top 100 overall, but kind of got to wonder, is he just more of like a 240 to 250 hitter long term than, you know, than a 260, 270 guy? That's kind of where I'm at with him right now. You know, what do you think on Casey, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly an interesting prospect because I don't think he's in the Cubs like sweet graces right now. Like he's not the next guy up in the outfield if something were to happen. Like they've got several options of talented like young outfielders, and while some of them have their flaws, like Kevin Alcantara, like Alcantara is clearly ahead of them on the depth chart at this point. Yeah. And that outfield's loaded. I mean, you've got Hap, Tucker, and PCA. So finding reps is going to be really, really hard. And you've got Siya Suzuki in the DH spot. So that definitely hurts Casey and even Alcantara, I'd say. But now you've got those guys that are going to be kind of sitting in AAA where they're going to start getting labels that they just can't crack the lineup because it's a good lineup and it's understandable. So they're really going to have to hit. I think both are really going to have to hit to show that they are capable. But with Casey, it's all about the contact. Because it's a 30-grade hit tool. Yeah, it's fun power. He's made strides at points where he's shown like the ability to get to more contact. And he's hit for average. That's the crazy thing. He's hit for average throughout his minor league career, which shows you how pretty useless minor league batting average is. People quote the slash all the time. It's pretty useless, if we're being honest, because the contact rates just aren't there. I mean, he's at best a 40-grade contact rate hitter. I think there's some holes in the swing, too, that leads him to kind of be like a power-hitting fourth outfield unless something changes. Like, he's kind of like a fourth outfielder that can hit some bombs, come off the bench, pinch hit spots. But, yeah, I mean, until that's cleaned up, it's hard to say, like, Casey's an everyday player, especially on this team. So yeah, I'll be interested to see. He's just 22. He'll be 23 this summer. But Casey's not in my top 100, that's for sure. And I kind of wonder if, you know, he continues to see a stock fall.
Oh, so you have him outside your top 100 now.
Yeah, I need to look exactly where I have him, but he is not there. So let's see. I have him 137.
Oh, I'm trying to find out where actually I do have him here. I currently have him 85, but I mean that keeps sliding lower and lower. That's still leaving the power. He can run a little bit, so I'm trying not to like have him fall too far. But I also wonder if I'm still too high in my ranking on him, which is weird because I was kind of lower than most on Casey when his value was kind of peak a year and a half ago, whenever that was. So figured I'd have him lower than this now, but yeah, he's definitely sliding down my rankings, and yep, definitely down your rankings as well. Last AAA guy we'll get to before we get to the major league guys, Kyle Teal, had a nice 6 RBI game yesterday. Already has 2 home runs, 8 RBI in his first 2 games, and obviously the White Sox roster, especially the catching spot, is not great. They are starting, so far in the first three games. The first game of the year was Corey Lee. So that was against a lefty, and Lee is a righty hitter. In the last two games, facing right-handed pitchers, they've gone with Matt Tice, who is not great either. Neither of these guys are good whatsoever, so it's just a matter of time before Kyle Teal is up in the major leagues. And you had a pretty sneaky good year last year. 13 home runs, 12 steals, 288, 386, 433 slash line, 13.5% walk rate as well. So Chris, when do you think we see Kyle Teal? And for fantasy purposes, you know, do you think he can become a guy that you can, you know, start right away, or maybe he's more of a two catcher league option moving forward?
I don't see why he's not starting right now for the White Sox. It's not even because the White Sox are extremely bad, but Kyle Teal has gotten even better from last year. Like this spring, he looked substantially better at the plate. He's always been a good catcher and he's been a good hitter too.
Yep.
But now Kyle Teal all of a sudden looks to have added a little power. I thought that was evident during the spring, and it's continued. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. We're talking a two game sample, but he's already hit a ball 111 in two games. That's standout in my opinion. His swing looks better. He's getting the ball in the air more often. Like, I don't know. I'm looking at Kyle Teal and I suddenly look at him in like a similar light to Drake Baldwin, where I think that he could come up and I think he could really thrive. So I wouldn't be shocked if that was the case, that we see him up soon. This is crazy, and the White Sox aren't going to do it, but they really should call him up like today and give him a run at the PPI pick. I mean, I think it's pretty rare that like a catcher like Kyle Teal would win that award, the Rookie of the Year award, that is, but I don't know. I just, why not? Like, what do you have to lose with keeping him in AAA? You know, we know he's better than Edgar Caro. They're not competing this year. Like, let Teal like just cut his teeth in against major league pitching and work it out. Like, I don't think he's going to get much better in AAA at this point, especially hitting in Charlotte's hitter's haven. So he's going to pad the stat sheet a ton. So I'd call him up today. I think his defense is ready. I think the bat's ready. Why not? And I know the White Sox won't do that, but they really should. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, and why not? Why not give these fans at least a little something to be excited about? I mean, no one's getting excited about Lenin Sosa, Jacob Amaya, and Corey Lee. Like, just bring up Teal. Bring up Colson Montgomery. You know, bring up, heck, even Chase Mydroth would be at least somewhat, I don't know, a little bit exciting as opposed to, you know, some of these guys that are running out there now. Bring up some of these young guys to see what you got in them and give them plenty of time at the major league level. You know, I don't see why you want at this point. You got a decent farm system. I mentioned a few guys that are, you know, major league ready, and then, you know, a few more that'll be up, you know, later on this year, like in Schultz or, you know, next year, Brandon Montgomery, et cetera, Hagen Smith. So you got a, you know, Grant Taylor too. You got a really fun farm system. So, you know, start bringing some of these guys up that are ready, like those few I mentioned, and give them some time. So, yeah, I think Teal, I don't know if Teal's ever like a top 10 fantasy catcher, but could he kind of be in that, you know, back end starting range or like a high end C2? Yeah. I think that's where he'll be at. So he could, you know, he can get for a solid average. He's got pop. He could, maybe even, I don't think he's going to be a double-digit steal guy, but could he add like 5 steals? Sure. I think he absolutely could. He's a good athlete. So, you know, just a guy that can give you a little bit of everything. Maybe kind of settle into that Gabriel Moreno range. Overall, not a direct comp, but just overall kind of range of value there where Moreno's kind of settled into. So I think Teal could absolutely be one of those guys. So, yeah. And he's someone I saw a lot in AA, both, you know, a little bit at the end of 2023 and then, you know, a lot last year before he got to call up the AAA. And, yeah, he was just very impressive in all facets of the game. But you had to trade him to get a guy like Crochet on this team. So understand that totally. All right, let's go over to Major League side here. Let's start with the kind of fun little talking point in baseball world today and yesterday. The New York Yankees with their I don't know what you want to call their
torpedo.
Torpedo. That's a good one. Their torpedo bats that remind me of those hard plastic bats that we use as kids that were skinnier in the handle and fatter at the barrel. But, you know, a lot of people have looked through you know, the Major League rule book. And while they're towing the line and pushing the line a little bit, the Yankees have not crossed the line. They've not done anything illegal, but they're definitely kind of tinkered with the bats a little bit and hit 9 home runs yesterday, 5 of which came off of former buddy of theirs, Nestor Cortez. Judge had 3 home runs. Jazz had 1. Wells had 1. Volpe had 1. Belly had 1. And I forget the other 2. But a lot of home runs flying out of Yankee Stadium yesterday. I don't know. Is there anything to take from this, Chris? I mean, is it going to, you know, obviously Judge has got to hit 1,000,000 home runs because he's Aaron Judge. So, yeah. You know, those guys, you don't really, it's not going to impact. But heck, maybe he'll hit 80 this year. Like, in fact, he's already going to hit 60 with a normal bat. Maybe he'll hit even more this year. But, you know, these guys, you know, like, you know, Anthony Volpe, especially, you know, how do you think this impacts them? I don't know. What's your whole take from this whole bat scenario here with the Yankees?
I think the happy fun ball's back, no matter who's playing. So that's my opinion based on the data that we're seeing. Barrel rates are through the roof. Home runs per batted ball are up. Exit velocity in general are up. The Yankees are homering again today. Rice has homered and Judge homered again. And Judge homer at 113, which is pretty absurd. But here's my thing. It meets all the rules. Here's MLB's qualifications for a bat. No longer than 42 inches, max barrel diameter of 2.61 inches, and it must be a solid piece of wood. That's what it is. I mean, my question is, why did nobody think to do this sooner?
Right.
Like, it makes logical sense to distribute the weight differently. And here's the thing. Bats have already had differently distributed weight anyway. Like, players for a long time have used bats that are heavier towards the end of the barrel, bats that are heavier towards the hosel. Like, it just, every bat's a little different for every player. So it's just something a little bit different. I mean, if the Yankees had not had that home run barrage yesterday, no one would have said a word about it. Like, why did the story come out after that happened? That's my thing. They've been using them all spring. It's not new. They were literally using them for a month in spring training. So, and I'm by no means a Yankees fan or a homer. So I'm sure somebody listening probably thinks that. But the reality is they're not cheating. I think it's just really the fact that teams should have thought of this sooner. So, I mean, why are teams not taking advantage of things they can within the rules? So that's my thought. Does it help players out? Yeah, I mean, maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't help all players because, again, like, I also get the fact that every player has a different point where on the bat where they're making the most contact. But at the same time, I don't think the Yankees are doing anything where it's like, oh, man, like, this is a significant advantage. So I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out because we're looking at a 2-game sample and maybe going on a third because Judge is going to homer regardless. Like, I don't think that's a surprise. I don't necessarily think the ball is like going any further with those bats. Like Judge's 113 homer just now at a 28-degree launch angle went 410 feet. Like nothing outlier about that. Ben Rice at 104 off the bat, 383 feet. Like I don't think you're looking at him and saying like these guys are just hitting the ball so much farther now, but they maybe are making more consistent contact given the point of the barrel. So, you know, people use axe handle bats. Okay, it's just a different kind of bat, in my opinion. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what comes of it. I don't think there's anything to really take away at this point, but it is fun to watch, and I think it's good innovation. Good job by the Yankees and their developer that thought of this. So that's kind of where I am on it.
Yeah, whoever that person is needs a raise. I mean, especially if this is something like, – do you think that Major League Baseball is going to step in eventually or – I've been back and forth on this because I think they want more offense in general, more home runs. Obviously, it's more exciting, you know, it gets more eyes on the game. So that's why we both kind of had that thought that the happy fun ball is back. So, I mean, I don't think they want teams just completely messing with bats all the time, but you know, I think they do want some offense. So I'm kind of on the fence if MLB is to step in on this one.
They mess with the ball every year, so what's the difference? Like MLB messes with the ball, and people are adjusting bats, and people are making a big deal of it. I mean, I just don't know. Like, we'll see. Like, we'll see how the Yankees start pacing. It could be interesting. I mean, you look at like the team leader or like the best team home run points. Like the people accused the Braves of cheating too in 2023 when they had their phenomenal run from a home run perspective. So it's just kind of always something. Yeah, I don't know. My thing is, if MLB constantly screws with the ball, like, what's the difference?
I know. No other sport messes with their ball, at least not that I know of, messes with their ball as much as Major League Baseball does. But we're moving away from bats, but talking some bat speed now. You know, Junior Caminero, I mean, it was just one game, so, you know, not a lot to take from it. But Junior Caminero yesterday had four batted balls, three of which were hard hit, two were 108-plus, and all had a bat speed above 81 miles an hour. It was 83.3, 81.5, 84.8, 81.2. That averages out to 82.7 miles per hour. Again, one game, but just to put it in perspective, last year, Stanton obviously led Major League Baseball in bat speed at 81.2 miles per hour, and then it was a 2.5 drop to O'Neill Cruz at 78.6, Schwarber 77.5, Judge 77.1, and good old Joe Adell at 76.7. But also the issue yesterday for Caminero, although he had three hits, was that the launch angles on those four batted balls were 1 degree, negative 16, negative 22, and negative 50. So hope this has turned into like another Yandy Diaz situation here, which is pounding everything hard into the ground. But, you know, Caminero has shown like that easy raw power throughout his career, and just now we get, you know, the bat speed data on him, and it's just off the charts so far. I mean, this could be a guy that jumps right into that Austin Riley, Rafael Devers range right off the bat, but are you concerned at all about, you know, the launch angles here for Junior Caminero?
Not really. I don't think so. I mean, you can certainly overcome launch angles at a certain point with how hard you hit the ball, and I think it all balances out with time. I mean, you look and, you know, he's had 13 swings so far, average bat speed of 81 miles an hour. Last year, for reference, was 77.2. He shortened up the swing a little bit, which is good. I think that's probably notable. And even with the issues last year, like, we're still talking somebody that ran a 12.5% barrel rate in the majors, considering launch angles. Yeah. And it's an even higher number in AAA. So, no, I'm not really concerned. I think Caminero is going to be really good. I think he's a consistent 30 home run bat that potentially gets to 40 some years. And to have the kind of power he does with the hit tool he does, and the hit tool is not great, but he has an average hit tool with 70 grade power. So he's legit, and I'm definitely buying in. I'm really curious to see what this year brings of him, but I'm not really concerned about the launch angles right now.
Where do you think he's being drafted next year? Like, so how many home runs do you think he gets this year, and what do you think a rough ADP for him is in 2026?
I mean, Devers and Riley at peak floated like 15 to 20 range, I think. So probably not that high. Like, he'd have to have a really good year. I think that he could get in the third to fourth round, like late third, fourth round, probably. Like, that wouldn't shock me at all. So, you know, 40 to 55 range, potentially reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's reasonable. I was kind of thinking, you know, high 30s, low to mid 40, like 37 to 45 ADP range. So, yeah, we're kind of in lockstep there. But yeah, Caminero, really, really exciting. Can't wait to see how many home runs he hits this year. I think he hit 30 this year for sure. I mean, we know he has that power, no doubt about it. Another guy off to a big power start, Eugenio Suarez, who already has four home runs in his first three games. He was a guy like all off season, you know, I was saying, you know, he's a great buy in dynasty leagues, especially for contending teams. And if you're rebuilding, you know, Suarez, you know, 33-year-old Suarez isn't really a great target for you. But, you know, contending teams, he's a phenomenal target. Then the ADP for redraft was like in the 180 range, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, people few conversations I had, people like, oh, well, you know, he had, you know, he hit that, 202 and 198 in back-to-back years. I'm like, okay, that was 4 and 5 seasons ago. I mean, the last 3 years, yeah, the averages have been great for him, but 236, 232, 256 the last 3 years. I mean, I really don't look at 4 or 5 years ago. That doesn't really have much impact on now, on the here and now. So, again, yeah, he's, you know, 240-ish hitter, give or take, but this is also a guy that has been one of the more consistent power bats in the game. He has 30 home runs in three of the last 4 years. Last year was 30 home runs, 101 RBI, 90 runs scored, and that Arizona lineup on paper could be even a little bit better this year. And he's always had the quality of contact has always been elite. I mean, 11.3% barrel rate last year, 42% hard hit rate. He's been above an 11% barrel rate each of the last six seasons. And even, you know, the contact rates, you know, aren't terrible. You know, he was 82% in zone last year. You know, so it wasn't like it was, you know, below 80% zone and like 62% overall or something like that. Like we've seen from other guys, it was fine. So, you know, he can pencil him in for 240 plus 30, you know, around 30 home runs. And again, he's already got four home runs so far this year in the first three games. So I love Suarez, and I think he's still being undervalued a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he's just that guy that's going to hit 30 every year. Not sure where the average falls, but last year, the last couple of years, he's been a second half surger. Last year, it was 20 home runs in the second half, and I think a 950 some OPS versus like a 660 OPS with 10 home runs in the first half. So a substantial improvement in the second half for Suarez. So if he starts the year good and gets heated up early and continues in the second half, then man, he's going to be something for sure. So yeah, I mean, I certainly believe in the profile. It's not like he's anything different than, you know, he's been in the past. I think the power's there. We know that. He's got a decent feel to get on base, and he's definitely got the pop for sure. So, yeah, I think you just kind of know what you can expect from him at this point.
Yep, absolutely. Next guy on the list, Lars Nootbaar, off to a good couple of first games here. 9 plate appearances. He's got a home run already, 3 runs, 4 RBI, and 0 strikeouts so far. 571 average through his first two games. You know, Nootbaar, I forget who it was. Someone was probably a St. Louis area person, but was saying that, you know, he could be as good as Ohtani at the plate or something like that. You remember that? That report that came out? I forget who it was. it was probably taken out of context. But
probably, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it was just that person trying to say how good Nootbaar is. And that part I totally get because, you know, Nootbaar is sneaky good. You look at the metrics from last year. I mean, yeah, he had 12 home runs in 109 games, hit 244, you know, nothing like super special there. But at the same time, you're looking at an 88.5% in zone contact rate, 84% overall, you know, better than league average walk and strikeout rates, and also pretty good quality of contact too, 10% barrel rate, just under 92 mile an hour average exit velocity, and a hair under a 50% hard hit rate. So outside of speed, I mean, he's a below average runner, but still gives you, you know, 7-10 a year or something like that. So it gives you a little bit at least. But offensively, you know, at the plate and with the bat, he's above average really across the board. Contact, you know, approach, power. He's hitting leadoff for the Cardinals. And you know, while it might not be the greatest year for them, that's still a decent lineup overall. So, I mean, I think we could be seeing you know, a breakout year from Nootbaar this year. Maybe he gets up over 20 home runs, gives you 10 steals, you know, plenty of runs, good average, good OBP. Yeah, I'm definitely buying Lars Nootbaar in all formats right now, especially Dynasty.
Yeah, he's one where it was eventually all going to come together. The underlying data on Lars Nootbaar has long been really good, which is fun to see. I mean, last year, I know he missed some time. And that's the other thing. Like, he's missed time with injuries for several years.
Very true.
Which at some point he's got to stay on the field. But he had 405 major league plate appearances last year. It wasn't flashy. It was 12 homers, 7 steals, like the 759 OPS, whatever, not great. But he ran a 50% hard hit rate that was 91st percentile. One of the best, I think he had the best chase rate or the lowest chase rate in baseball. Like 16-point-something%. He rarely whiffs. He can take a walk. He can hit the ball hard. And like we've seen that, it's just being able to turn those hard hit balls into barrels. The launch angle is a little bit of an issue hitting the ball in the sweet spot. But I do believe that with a couple of tweaks, you know, all of a sudden we're really cooking with something, especially considering the contact ability and the ability to hit the ball hard. Not to mention being a decent athlete with a good instinct on the base paths. Like, Newt could steal you some bags, and it wouldn't be shocking at all. So, you know, I'm very much in on Lars Nootbaar. I think I would go ahead and buy in if you could, because Yeah, I don't know. I just think that the cost could get really, really high. So we'll see, but I'm very much in.
Yeah, me too. And yeah, he's been kind of consistently in like that 110 to 120 games played the last 3 years, 108, 117, and then 109 last year. So yeah, it'd be really nice to see him get up and, you know, up over 130 games, up over 600 plate appearances, because his career high so far in plate appearances is 503. So it'd be nice to see that tick up here moving forward. We a couple more power guys here before we get into several pitchers that have impressed over their first start of the season. But we got Spencer Torkelson and Tyler Soderstrom, two guys that have both been, you know, at one point or another, especially Torkelson, a top, you know, highly touted prospect, but their time in the major leagues hasn't really gone, you know, as well as you'd hope. But you know, both of them off to good starts to the season so far, and Torque was hitting really well in spring training as well. He hit 340 with 5 home runs this spring, and then already off to a good start here, 4 hits in his first 3 games with 5 walks, a home run, and even stole a bag randomly, which is kind of fun to see, but obviously won't continue. But Soderstrom had a 2-homer game already. He was one of 4 double-dong games on opening day. He's getting some run at first base for the Athletics. And both of them, you know, Chris, even through their kind of inconsistencies and the kind of underwhelming slash lines, you know, the metrics were never terrible for either of these two guys, both in terms of like contact and power. I mean, Torque's power did dip last year, but was really good in 2023. But the contact skills were not terrible, you know, whatsoever. You know, you could say they maybe were below average, but not terrible by any means. And Soderstrom last year had a 14.5% barrel rate and a near 50% hard hit rate. So always had some intrigue here in these metrics. So kind of what are you looking at from these two? I know it's super early, but would you be looking to buy either Torkelson or Soderstrom in a dynasty league right now?
Oh man, Torkelson's been the talk of the town, and I think that a lot of people think he's back. He may be, but here's my thing. Like, Torkelson was never as bad as he was in 2024, and he probably is not as good as he was in 2023.
Yep.
So you combine the two seasons, and you get in that kind of middle ground of who he will be. People have talked about the approach, the plate discipline. He's always been a really good approach type. Like, Torkelson's always had a great approach. He's always run low chase rates. He can take a walk. Like, he knows and picks his spots. And I don't know. Like, I look at the profile, and a lot of the numbers are still a little bit similar to what we've seen in the past as far as power goes, as far as contact goes. Like, the approach, you know, it's early. So, like, nothing is remotely close to being stabilized. But I guess it's worth keeping an eye on. You know, I think that he has faced some tough pitchers. I think that's worth noting, too. Like, going out to L.A. and facing some tough pitchers, like, and you perform, that certainly should catch people's eye. But with Torque, I think it's, for me, it's too soon to be like, yeah, I'm back in on him. We'll see. I'm willing to miss the boat. Like, if he does really pop off and I miss the boat, like, I'll wear it. Like, don't have a problem with that. I'm just not ready to dive all in on him yet. Soderstrom's interesting. He definitely always had the power. And Soderstrom's always run better contact rates than people have given him credit for. Like, he's always kind of got trashed for, like, contact, but his contact rates were pretty good. Like, he's run really good in-zone contact rates. His approach has been a problem, like, kind of the opposite of Torkelson. Like, Soderstrom does have an approach problem. Like, he swings at everything. He chases often. And so it has caused him to run into issues at times. And, again, he's still running a high chase rate, but he's making contact and he's hitting the ball hard. So, as I said earlier, I think that Soderstrom can stick in this lineup long term, and I think him and Kurtz can coexist. So, yeah, I'm pretty interested for sure.
You know, I'm definitely interested a little bit in both. I mean, admittedly, I was never the biggest on either of them when they were prospects. So I ranked them. I wasn't like low on them, but I think I was a bit lower than most, I think is fair to say. But, you know, like I mentioned, the metrics are, you know, still fairly intrigued, especially the power metrics. You know, it's just, do these guys get full-time reps? I mean, we talked about Nick Kurtz earlier. You know, what does this look like when he's ready? You know, when they want to call him up, what does that mean for a Tyler Soderstrom? So I'm not kind of not sure where he fits into the, that long-term picture and if he kind of gets squeezed out. But if he's hitting well, it'd make a very hard decision for the Athletics. But, yeah, I think there's definitely some intrigue here. I'm not, like, rushing out to try to acquire either of these two guys, but I'm definitely monitoring them, see how they perform moving forward, because there are some good things to take away from their metrics over the last couple of years for sure, even with the inconsistent surface stats. All right, let's go over to some a quattro of pitchers here, starting with Mackenzie Gore, who's had probably the best start so far of the 2025 season. Six innings, one hit, zero runs, zero walks, and 13 strikeouts on opening day. Just absolutely masterful performance there from Gore. You know, he threw 41 fastballs, 23 sliders, 14 curveballs, 9 changeups, and 6 cutters. So a little bit of a different look from him so far this year, just one start. You know, but slider was a pitch he didn't really use at all last year, only 38 times the entirety of last year, 1.3% usage rate, and used it second most of his 5 offerings on opening day. So do you think there's, you know, any legit changes to take away here from Gore, Chris? You know, he's always been kind of fun, but, you know, always been kind of sitting in that, you know, mid-4 ERA range, you know, 8-9% walk rate, higher whip. Do you think there's a reason to believe that Gore could take a step forward this year and maybe become like a top 50 arm or even better than that?
I think he's a top 20 arm. I think that he was near the, like, elite status last year if it wasn't for a couple blow-up starts. Like, the way he ended the season, the way he started the season, he had a couple bumps in the middle of the road that really affected his overall stats, but Gore was pretty dang good for the majority of starts in 2024. I'm not shocked at all. Like, this is somebody that's evolved their arsenal and continued to get better. He reworked his slider where it's now getting a little more spin. I mean, the spin axis is different and he's getting a little more movement on it. And he's absolutely, he obliterated righties with it, and he threw it some to lefties too, which was interesting. I mean, it plays well off the fastball, in my opinion. I think the fastball is good with Gore. So I'm really curious to see, like, you know, what sticks with him. Is he going to be this elite all year? No, but I do think Gore has the makings of a top 20 starter. And, you know, that doesn't surprise me just given how good he was last year. If you look at the surface, you're probably like, he wasn't that good last year. But if you look at it broken down, based on game, the majority of his starts, like, he was pretty spectacular, and he's got the arsenal to go with it. The way he ended his season last year, I mean, he had 9 strikeouts in 3 different games over his final 5 starts last year, so he's already trending in that direction. He had multiple 10-plus strikeout outings last year, and the ratios, honestly, were pretty good for the majority of the year. You look at the FIP and the XFIP, Sierra, they all suggest he pitched better than the 3.9 ERA. And again, you can't take out the bad starts, but if you did take out the 6 earned run starts, then all of a sudden it's looking significantly different. So, yeah, I'm a firm believer in Mackenzie Gore. I think that he's somebody that might be too late to buy in on, but I think that he's definitely legit.
All right, I'm going to play a little who you got here, but I'm going to switch up a little bit. This is not for right this second, but I'll say, you know, I'll ask, who do you think will be ranked higher in dynasty rankings at the end of this season? So we'll preface it with that. Let's go Mackenzie Gore or Ryan Pepio.
Those are two guys I love. I wrote both those guys as breakouts. That's tough. I think you'll see Gore ranked higher, and here's why. I think Pepio is going to have some rough stretches pitching Steinbrenner. The ball's just going to carry there, and he's been prone to some home runs before. So I think that Pepio may pitch really good and wind up having a little higher ERA than you might, and more home runs allowed than you might think, and that probably hurts his perceived value. So I'll go Gore there, even though I really like Pepio and think he's going to have a really good year.
Yeah, I know you like Pepio. That's why I picked that one to start. I'll do another one here, another one who didn't have the greatest, well, it wasn't bad first outing, but a lot of spring training hype in this guy I like a lot too. So end of the year, Gore or Gavin Williams?
Another really close one. kind of lean Gore just because I don't trust Gavin's health fully, but I do like the changes that Gavin has made this spring. So I think it's close, but I'll go Gore.
Yeah, that's fair to say that Gore probably a little bit safer, maybe a smidge more upside for Williams. But yeah, I like both those guys a lot. Let's do one more here. A guy that's a little bit different. He's more of the, you know, I guess he's not really a vet. I guess he kind of can be a veteran now, but a little bit different profile here. Another guy who has a lot of hype right now. So last one here, we'll go Mackenzie Gore or Christopher Sanchez.
I'll go Gore. Sanchez gives you the floor. I think Gore's going to strike more batters out, just give you the K upside that people want, especially from a lefty with his stuff and velocity. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'll lean.
I lied. We'll do one more real quick. Gore or Brian Wu?
Ooh, I don't think Wu's going to be healthy all year, so I don't know. I'm really afraid of Wu's arm being a ticking time bomb. I think Wu's the better pitcher. So I'll just say Wu because I do think Wu's the better arm and better pitcher right now, but at the same time, I'm not sure he makes it all year, so we'll see on that.
All right, I was just trying to see where you would how high you were going with Gore. I assume you have him below like a Hunter Brown, right?
Yeah, right now.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. All right, cool. All right, moving on here to Jesus Luzardo, a guy that might be one of the most maddening pitchers for me over the years. Because I've always had shares of Luzardo, both redraft and dynasty, and some years it's gone great, but more often than not, you're more frustrated than kind of happy with how things go with Gore's. I mean, with Luzardo, just because he's only had 1 year with. You know, we give Glasnow a lot of shit about, you know, his innings, but Luzardo is kind of the same, where he has 2 years over 100 innings, and those back-to-back years in 2022 and 2023. And yeah, Glasnow's been around for longer, so it's a longer track record of, you know, missing starts for him, but only 1 year above 100 and really above 101 innings, because his second highest innings pitch total is 100.1. And he had 178.2 in 2023, then only made 12 starts last year. And he's just been super inconsistent for the most part, you know, with his ratios here. Last year was a 5 on the dot. Then he had 2 years below a 3.6 before that, but had 11 strikeouts on Saturday in 5 innings, allowed 2 runs. And, you know, really, you know, fun thing for him, he's, you know, adding a sweeper in this year. You know, a 22% usage rate in his first outing yesterday, which was his second most used pitch behind his four-seamer. You know, last year he was four-seam, slider, changeup, sinker. This year, those four again, plus sweeper, and he used all of them at least 14% of the time in his first outing. So, a lot to always unpack with Luzardo, upside, health, just consistency in general. Still only 27 years old, though. Still on the younger side here for pitchers. So where are you at with Luzardo these days, Chris? Are you looking to buy right now? Are you intrigued? Or are you kind of, you know, more so fading given what we've seen from him the last several years?
I was kind of fading, and he comes out and looks dominant. I mean, he wasn't good this spring either, so that was a little bit concerning. But the new sweeper is a fascinating pitch. I mean, it's a pretty hard sweeper for what you get out of it. And it's like 7-8 inches of glove side movement on it. Way harder than the average sweeper. Obviously a little less sweep, but the velocity, I mean, it plays pretty well. I think it's a tough look for hitters. He also throws a more gyro-ish slider and a changeup to righties. So that's certainly gives him some other pitches to get outs with. And the fastball, I mean, velocity's back. He was sitting near 97, which was up pretty substantially from last year. I know he was hurt last year too, which doesn't help, but the slider and changeup are harder as well. So I'm pretty fascinated to see where it goes. There's never been much denying the arm talent with Jesus Luzardo. Like, he's always had that upside dating back to his prospect days, but he's also never stayed healthy. The most innings you've gotten out of him is 178 in 2023. Otherwise, he's only gone over 100 one other time, and it was 100.1 innings. So he barely broke the 100 inning threshold in 2022, and he's always hurt. So it's something to watch. I think that maybe it's a decent buy low opportunity. Maybe not now, since, you know, we saw what happened in the dominant start. But I do think that if he's healthy, Lizardo can be solid.
So that's the reason why I'm kind of still fading a little bit. I mean, it's intriguing, and I've always been intrigued by Lizardo's talent. I mean, there's no denying that when he's healthy, when he's on, he could be one of the 25 most talented arms in all of baseball. But I just look back at just the poor track record of staying healthy, and I've really been shying more and more away from these guys. And, they'll have their year. Glasnow, these types of guys, Byron Buxton, etc. They'll have their years, but those years are just so few and far between where it's not worth it. What you have to deal with, between the peaks, right? The valleys are more prevalent than the peaks, and that's why I'm kind of starting to not be as big on Luis Robert, just because it's with him, it's so many issues that are more highlighted than the one huge year that he had a couple years ago. So I've been fading this type of player in general. So he's a guy that if this hot start continues and he's got end of April, he's one of the league leaders in strikeouts and looking pretty good, I might look to sell high. I mean, that's not a knock against the talent whatsoever. I just don't have any confidence really that he can stay healthy, and that's the main reason why I might be looking to sell if he continues on this hot start here. But now we get two more names here. Another guy that I've always been low on, and people should know that, is Jack Leiter. Though he had a good start here, his first outing of the year against my Red Sox, only allowed one run in five innings with four strikeouts. Fastball was touching triple digits this spring, averaged 97.8 on the four-seamer and 96.7 on the sinker in that first outing against Boston, while mixing in the changeup, the slider, and the curveball. And people are, once again, kind of talking about Jack Leiter, with how he looked this spring and with the velocity and his good first outing here of the 2025 year. 24 years old still. Feels like he should be a year or two older than that, but still only 24 years old. Where are you at on Leiter these days, Chris?
I don't think he's got the command. He looked good. I mean, I will say he looked better, but I still don't believe that he has the command to be a regular starter. And he's going to start for him this year. Like, there's no doubt he's going to start, just given what's going on with that team right now. They need arms. They're going to have Rocker and Leiter start, which is great. Like, that's a lot of fun to see both those guys in the same rotation again after they were in the same rotation at Vanderbilt. They've got several guys hurt. Gray's hurt. Bradford's hurt. So I think Leiter is going to consistently start all year. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't. Do I think that he's going to be dominant? Maybe. Maybe not. I just don't think he can locate his pitches well enough. He's throwing a new sinker. He's got the kick changeup. Everybody does. The sinker is 97. It's got some carry and good arm side run. It's slightly, it's velocity wise, just a tick down from the four seam. But I don't think there's, I don't know. The four seam and sinker shape are pretty similar. So that's another interesting thing. We'll see if it continues and he differentiates them at all. Changeup's harder. It's less vertical break. It's a kick change. Like, it fits exactly what you see out of a kick change movement profile. So I'm interested to see how that works out. But never been a thing where you denied Leiter stuff. Like, I always thought he had good stuff. I think Leiter's always had too many voices in his head. Like, I mean, his father's an MLB pitcher. He's got a lot of good coaches over the years. He's got a lot of voices in his head. And I think that he struggled to really focus in, on what he can do best other than what people are telling him to do best. But we'll see. I'm not super excited about Leiter. I just don't think that the command's there for him to consistently be a sub 10% walk guy. We'll see how that shakes out. That might be a totally bad read on my part, but you look at his walk rates throughout his minor league career and they're not great. So something to watch, but I think he's always going to hover around that 10% range. And he's going to have to miss bats too, which we'll see if he does.
No, I don't think that's a bad read at all, because I have that same read. And, he's never, like I said, this has been an issue for him even back when he was, the dude, him and Rocker at Vanderbilt. Even back then, look at his final year at Vandy before he was drafted. And he had 45 walks in 110 innings. That's over 10%. He faced 430 batters that year. Overall, In the minor leagues, he had a 12.5% walk rate, and in college, it was 10.8%. So it's always been high. You know, the command has never been great, like you mentioned. And I just, yeah, he'll have his outings where he looks really dominant and gets, you know, people to buy in because of the name value. But I think, yeah, I kind of feel this is not a direct comp, but just I have a same feel or on him as I did about Kyle Harrison a couple years ago, where, yeah, it's fun at times, but it's just super inconsistent, and that's just going to limit him overall and make the overall end of season line not be the greatest. And now Harrison's back down in AAA for San Francisco to start the year. So, yeah, I'm still out on Leiter. If you have him, I would use the spring, the velo, and you know the first outing of the year to sell high if you can right now in all both redraft and dynasty leagues. Last name here, we're going with Jose Soriano, who pitched 7 shutout innings on Saturday, 2 walks, 2 hits allowed, and 5 strikeouts. Yeah, it was the White Sox, but well, first of all, who scheduled the White Sox and the Angels as an opening weekend series? What sick, twisted individual thought that was a good idea? But beside that, Soriano looked pretty damn good. And then Sean Burke looked good for the White Sox on opening day. I like Burke a good bit, too, this year. But Soriano is really intriguing. Still 26 years old. He's coming off a pretty decent 2024. 3.42 ERA in 113 innings. 1.20 whip. Right around the league average walk rate. Oh, no, that's this year. So last year was a little bit above, but still 9.5% walk rate. But the reason why he's still kind of, you know, not a super highly talked about guy or ranked guy is, you know, the below average K rate, 20.7% last year, when he had the 5 strikeouts and 7 innings in his first outing, because Soriano was more of a sinker heavy guy that led to a 60% ground ball rate last year. But he does have offerings that can miss bats. And last year, he had a knuckle curve that he used 25% of the time that had a 40% whiff rate. Splitter had a 33% whiff rate and slider 46% whiff rate. The problem is those last two, the splitter and the slider, combined for 13.5% usage rate last year and only used them 5 times on his first outing yesterday for a 6.8% usage rate. So if he maybe uses those a little bit more, I can see that K rate ticking up a little bit. You know, remains to be seen if that will happen. But I think he's just a good low-cost investment. He's not going to be one of your core arms of your fantasy rotation, but could it be like a, you know, your SP 5, 6, 7, somewhere in that range? Yeah, I think he can give you decent ratios, you know, keep those in check, and hopefully you get the at least a league average K rate, maybe a tick above. So I think there's kind of sneaky good value here with Jose Soriano.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good sinker. Like you said, while he doesn't miss bats, it's okay. Ratios might be pretty decent. You know, I think the early returns on the shape were that the sinker is a little different this year, which is something to watch. You know, the velocity was down a tick, so that's obviously something to look at too. But there's a little less movement on it, which is interesting. But slider looks good. I mean, substantially better than it was last year. I think that could help. You know, if he can miss bats with that slider and he can see the K rate tick up even like a couple of percentage points, then we're really cooking. So I am certainly intrigued by the potential with Soriano. I think he's a good deep league target. I don't think he's rostered too many places. And I don't think people see him as valuable. But you know, even from an Angels perspective, like he's somebody that I am still interested in and think, even though he's not going to get a lot of wins, I think the pitcher there is pretty decent. So let's keep an eye and see what he does, because I'm intrigued at least to see. And I think that even if he's not like a stud or anything, like he can be a good arm.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair. And he's easily my second favorite arm in that rotation behind Yusei Kikuchi. And until, you know, Keaton Dana comes up, I mean, I have zero intrigue in like Kochanowicz, Tyler Anderson, Kyle Hendricks, those guys, Reed Detmers. Like, I'm not intrigued in those guys. So yeah, Soriano, obviously Kikuchi had a really good end of the year last year. And I think Soriano's going to be pretty solid value this year. So yeah, good low cost dynasty target for sure. All right, that's going to wrap us up for this week. Thanks, all the listeners, for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will talk with you all again next week. But until then, everyone take care.